Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
He's a sociopath, he's a psychopath, he's a bully.
That's his magic power. That's how he's been getting away with things for 78, 79 years, is by bullying people and lying. And, you know, he's not an ordinary man. This man should already be in jail.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and because I'm not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway from the Society for the Rule of Law to explain the legal news to me, and also other stuff, like today, because there's some legal stuff, but there's also just a lot of other stuff. I think the biggest thing I wanted to ask you about is because
we're looking terribly excited about this.
Well,
are you like excited about for the new Trump administration? You seem so happy.
You know what? Matt Gaetz having to take himself out of the running and then not going back to Congress, it is filling me with a bit of joy, I must say. But I'm interested in
your opinion. Well, he could still serve in the next Congress. I don't think he actually swore off his seat in the next Congress because he was reelected.
But he said last night that he wouldn't go back. And you know why?
Because of the ethics report.
Mm-hmm. What do you think's in that ethics report?
I don't know. I mean, I did see the Venmo graph. Did you see the Venmo chart?
I don't know if I saw the chart. I know
it was this amazing chart. And I think it was, I don't know where it came from, but it was republished in the New York Times. And it basically was like all the Venmo transactions to all the young women. And it was like, I mean, it was like
a constellation.
It was like a like a circuit board for a very, very complex electrical system. Somebody was getting a big charge out of it.
Uh-huh. So the thing that I was excited, not excited.
Yeah, excited's a bad word.
It's bad, but I wanted your thoughts on is like, I am blown away by the number of people who are credibly accused of sexual assault in this cabinet. Because it's not just
there, but for the grace of God goes anybody.
See, I don't agree with this.
It's just possible. You can walk down the street and somebody says, he assaulted me.
Yeah.
And you don't buy that?
Well, in the case of Trump and in the case of Gaetz and in the case of Hegseth and in the case of RFK, it is like tons of people.
Well, you know, it's like, what was that candy commercial? You can't take just one. I mean, this is what these people do. That's what they are.
Even Linda McMahon. Like,
yeah, but that's derivative. Okay, that was her husband's thing.
Okay, she knew about it and didn't do anything. Here's the thing I want to get at, though.
Yeah,
it seems like
there's a high percentage here that there's like an unusual distribution of these people in this particular administration, statistically significant variance from the norm.
Is that what you're saying? What message do you think this sends to women in general? Because I am normally not one. I'm not one for a couple of things. A, like, I'm not the morality police. I was the one, you know, like, I spent all these years being lectured by social conservatives, you know, about why gay people shouldn't be able to get married. And they believe that, you know, sexual morality is akin to character and all of this stuff. And, you know, so like having those people lecture me for all of those years, to be like, sexual assault, though, totally cool. Like a couple of decades later, everyone's cool with sexual assault.
See, they're very much interested in orifices and things like that, but they're not actually interested in, you know, people giving permission to other people and not telling and telling the truth to other people and not lying. But they have that issue. They have this warped view of morality that has more to do with like technicalities than it does to actually being a good person. That's just my own personal opinion, but that seems to be where they are on this stuff. Like, so he forced himself on. Oh, so it was a police report. So what? It's like, you know, these things happen. That's just the way they look at these things. It's really sick.
Yeah. What a coincidence that it just happened to so many of them.
I mean, is it a coincidence that you've got, well, I'm not going to call them all psychopaths, but there are a large number of sociopaths just sort of congregating in Mar-a-Lago these days. And, you know, it just, bad people attract other bad people. And that's what we see here. I think it's sort of hard. It's sort of like, I mean, and I think also the bad people are encouraging the selection of bad people because it makes them seem less bad. You see what I'm saying there?
Oh, I do. I've been reading a lot about Trump's four-dimensional chess, where he nominated Matt Gaetz so that everyone would be like, but he's so bad.
Well, it's not four-dimensional chess. He's not capable of tic-tac-toe. Okay?
No, he's just eating the pieces.
He's just eating the pieces. That's exactly right. Just consuming the pieces, as many as possible. And then if one doesn't really work out, he just spits that one out and he chooses something else. And that's what he's doing. It doesn't, you know, people are saying, oh, what a big faux pas. How terrible is he? Shot himself in the foot with the Gaetz nominee. He doesn't care. Okay. He doesn't care. It's like, okay, fine. You don't like that one. I got another one for you. And well, this is just going to keep happening. He does not care. Okay. He's just out there just spitting stuff out, and the more destructive, the better.
Well, the Matt Gaetz thing is particularly gross in that it was with underage girls and he was paying them and taking them across state lines. And so for a political party that is basically centered its greatest, conspiracy theory, like there's a whole group of QAnon people who are focused on sex trafficking and pedophilia. And so the idea that Matt Gaetz was going to become the highest law or the highest arbiter of law in this country, to me, was deeply alarming. And so to see him get pulled out of the running is good. I'm happy about that.
Yes.
But here's my question for you.
Yes.
Does that mean, we've been wrestling with this, we wrestled with it on Tim's pod this morning. Do you think that means that the senators are now going to show some spine?
No.
Okay. You didn't even let me get to the second half of the question.
Well, basically, you said senators showing spine, and I assume you were referring to Republican senators, and that just basically, those are words that do not go together.
Well, they scuttled this nomination.
I don't have to hear, they didn't, they scuttled the nomination. I mean, they didn't even have the courage to go out and say, I won't vote for the guy, right? They kind of said, oh, we think a number of us, but I'm not going to tell you who, aren't going to vote against the guy. And please keep that off the record. Okay. So, you know, I don't give them huge amounts of courage points for saying on background to reporters that many people will not vote for the guy without actually saying themselves that they wouldn't vote for the guy, particularly when the guy, well, you know, apart from being a sexual predator and molester or whatever he is, I mean, he's, by Trump standards, he's low grade because he was only accused of statutory rape as opposed to the real thing. But in his case, you know, the guy wasn't even, he never even practiced law for real. I mean, he was basically he worked at a Central Florida law firm for just a little while before he ran for the state legislature. He's never practiced law, even civil litigation. And this guy was going to be Attorney General of the United States. I mean, I don't give Republican senators a lot of credit here for, silently nixing this nomination if that's what they did.
So I agree with you that, I mean, yes, we're not talking about profiles and courage, but looking forward. So here, let me just tell you what stood out to me.
Yeah.
So basically for most of these really insane nominees, and I would use that Gaetz, Hegseth, RFK, and Tulsi. Let's just like, these are, I mean, Linda McMahon, weird, like.
Linda McMahon at least has run something.
Yes. But these four are both, they're somewhere from, they range. No, wait, all of them actually, they hold two main qualities, which is that they're both deeply unqualified for the position, then they're actively dangerous, potentially, in those positions, right? So it seems like you've got Murkowski and Collins are sort of famed moderates here who are not afraid to stand up to Trump and have.
Right.
So you don't have a huge majority. And it looks like Mitch McConnell, who Trump has tormented and who has failed to stand up to Trump at basically every turn, but is a back sort of behind the curtain strong tactician. You don't think that McConnell could be organizing some of these folks to say no to the fact that they did one. You don't think they'll do others?
I mean, I don't know. I just do not think, and I've been saying this for a while, that you can go broke betting on the spinelessness of GOP senators. Okay. And I don't give them a lot of credit for what they did with Gates, because Gates was so off the wall and off the charts bad.
So is RFK, but I think, and Tulsi and Hegseth.
Right. And they're still there.
I mean, Gates was the prime target, but now you don't think, I just feel like it's turning to Hegseth a little bit, because he's going to oversee 3 million people, and like the police report on him. It's pretty bad. Why don't you talk about that a little bit? Tell us.
Well, look, it's your classic. It's hard to say exactly what happened, because people may have been drunk. We don't know. But then she shows up in an emergency room and tells a nurse that she was raped. And then the cops investigate. And, you know, you don't see really a denial from Hegseth, a clear denial out of him. Even the other day, I mean, you just don't see, and it just, the facts just look really bad. It just really look, I mean, I just, I think it was one of these cases where I can understand a prosecutor saying, well, this isn't great and he probably did it, but I can't necessarily, it's going to be a swearing match and I'm going to run into reasonable doubt because nobody's going to actually know what happened there. But, you know, it's hard for me to believe that a woman would make that all that up. And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty raw. And he did pay her off. And then his denial the other day, which was something like, the matter was resolved. It was like, you know, it was just very, very weak. And it doesn't look great.
And so I guess I've got two questions for you then. One is, do you think he'll be confirmed? Because I think the heat's on him now next. And two, this just before you answer that, the other thing, and I guess this is what I was getting at sort of at the beginning when I was talking about the general posture toward women, Pete Hegseth would be responsible for 3 million people, many of whom are women. And like, why, like Pete Hegseth couldn't be hired to run any company. Nobody would put him in charge with the kind of record that he has.
Yeah, kind of like this other guy. What's his name? Trump?
Sure.
Are we going to apply standards here? Why is he not the perfect nominee for a criminal rapist?
Well, why president? Wasn't? But well, Gates was too, and I'm saying he got knocked out because I started out a little happy.
As I said,
and
Gates was only a, you know, again, as I said, Gates was only an accused statutory rapist. He was not fully qualified for this cabinet.
But you stomped on my optimism at the outset because I feel like we got one. We got one of the bad guys, and he's gone. And I feel like it portends the potential for some of these other supremely bad people to go down. And because one of the things that alarms me, and I know it alarms you, is that we are as a culture seeming to affirm that if you sexually assault people, it's cool. Like you can still be in charge of lots of women. You can still hold the highest offices. And, you know, that is, it's Trump obviously is pernicious and awful for all kinds of reasons, which we have discussed ad nauseum. Yeah. It is wild to watch him do it with all these other people who are not him, and have everybody tolerate it, especially social conservatives.
But that's what he wants. That's his power. That's his way of exercising power. Okay.
Is to force people to accept
the unacceptable and say, you don't have a choice because I'm here. And I can make your life miserable, and you're weak and sad.
And this is what I'm pushing back on, though, because they did do it with Gates. So why might they
again,
not do it?
Again, I would have to see. I mean, I think they did it with Gates, but it wasn't really a hard. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it was there must have been stuff in that report that was pretty bad. And okay, that's fine. But he should have. He was so off the charts to begin with. I just don't see it as a big deal that he went by the wayside. And I will agree if Tulsi and Hegseth and RFK Jr., they all should go down.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
But I wouldn't bet that they will all go down.
I think we can get one
and
more.
And maybe get one more, but so what? He's still going to be appointing bad people. And he's going to be doing it continually. And he's going to keep doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. And a number of these, sooner or later, they're going to get through. I hate to be, you know, I mean, I just don't think the Republican senators, when push comes to shove, when the Klieg lights are on them, and it becomes them on TV saying Donald Trump picked somebody bad, and they're forced to actually show a spine and show their faces on Fox News, I think we're going to see a lot of backsliding on this stuff. Now, yeah. I mean, again, the saving grace is the slimness of the majority.
Yeah.
And only, you know, and you lose Murkowski and Collins and you're almost done. All it takes is one or two more.
Yeah. This is where it's not that I'm going to give Republicans credit for a spine so much. It's that, can you get four? Can you get four? And usually that means getting two, because Murkowski and Collins, if they think they got anybody else with them, I think they try to tank most of these people.
I'll have to see it to believe it. Yeah. I just do not have the same level of potential confidence. I did not think all of these people would go through, but okay. I think some of them will, and the fact that any of them could be considered, and it is appalling.
Pam Bondi, what do you know about her?
She was Attorney General of Florida. I can't say whether she was a good Attorney General of Florida, since I don't live in Florida. I really didn't pay much attention to her. She at least has, unlike the prior nominee, at least on paper, the credentials for a potential AG pick. I mean, she was actually a prosecutor. She was a county prosecutor. Then she was the head prosecutor in one of the nation's largest states. So in that sense, it's a relatively normal pick. On the other hand, you know, you've got, I mean, she was all in on the 2000 election fraud.
Sure was. Right? The 2020 she election absolutely fraud. Was. Yeah.
2020 election fraud. And to me, it's just, I can't look. I find it difficult to believe that anyone selected by Donald Trump and willing to accept an appointment by Donald Trump, with very minor exceptions. It's hard for me to accept that any such person wants to act in the public interest.
Yeah.
And so I come with that healthy level of skepticism toward basically almost any appointment. The only possible exception was the suggestion that Jay Clayton would be to run the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, although he's an unorthodox pick. I think actually he's a decent man and an honest man, and he would, you know, and a smart guy, and he'd do a good job, even though he's not an experienced prosecutor. Well, I guess, I don't know. I mean, and so Bondi, she's got the right political pedigree. She's been all in for Trump. She's a member of America First Policy Institute, that great grifting entity that's been existing, you know, as a government in exile for a few years now. And, I think we could have done worse, actually. That's the only good thing I have to say about Bondi, and we'll see. And we'll see whether she can command the respect of people in the Justice Department. I think she probably will be confirmed. I mean, there was that questionable issue about the $25,000 donation from a Trump charity to her, you know, that was very, very screwy. But I don't think that's going to derail her nomination.
Yeah, I mean, she is like a through and through MAGA type. I think she also defended him during the first impeachment, right? She was on his legal team. So she's been going to bat for this guy.
Yeah. And that first, you know, the defense of, I mean, it wasn't as bad as the defense of the insurrection, but it was pretty bad. They had some really horrible moments there where they were, they're just basically spreading rumors about false rumors about Ukraine on the floor of the Senate, making these arguments that were just completely in bad faith. Every single one of those lawyers, I mean, it was a disgrace. But, I think she'll probably get through, and at least she kind of on paper looks like an appropriate pick.
Yeah. And I think that, look, when assessing Trump's cabinet picks at this point,
right,
almost none of them. There's no one that I'm trying to think about one that I'm like, oh, that's a good pick. Maybe the
right.
only
no,
one.
Right. No, no. That's exactly right. And don't get me exactly. I'm not saying, oh, she's a good pick. I don't think she could possibly right. in any normal Republican administration, any normal administration, somebody, I mean, she would not get the job.
That's okay. Right.
You know, I mean, she's not, you know, I mean, for all the complaining about DEI, you know, she doesn't match up to any number of people who the Trumpers like to accuse of being DEI picks. Okay. This woman does not have, you know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the only good ones, right. And again, good is like relative. It's like
good is relative.
Rubio and Stefanik they're not that they're good. It's that they're conventional. They like used to be normal. So you think like maybe there's like Rubio at state is not terrible. No. I am pleased.
My vote for Rubio,
even though
I think he's, you know, I think he's shameless and spineless, but I,
yes,
you know, that's
all the things.
So what, you know, I mean, that's not the first time you've had it's a normal political pick. It's within the realm of normality. Absolutely.
Within the realm of normality, yeah. Which I think, yes, she is on the outer edge of,
right.
But in the grading on the insane MAGA curve that we're grading
on. Right, right. She's not a sexual molester or and her principal experience with the criminal justice system isn't like Gates's, which was to be investigated. I mean, she actually was prosecuted.
Right.
And, you know, she's not a convicted criminal like the president of the United States. So, I mean,
we cannot trust her to defend our institutions, probably. And she will probably do what it takes to help Trump in whatever way that he wants.
Yeah,
so it's
on
good,
all, but... yeah, right, right. And all other things being equal, but the question is, will she be kind of like Barr? Okay, Barr could not be trusted to defend the institutions of the United, you know, of not to put his finger on the scale in favor of Trump. On the other hand, at the end of the day, He did some okay things, like saying you lost the election, right? So she's beneath that standard already. We'll have to see what he demands of her, and whether she accedes to it. And you know, the problem that she's going to have is he's never going to be happy. There's a problem with all these people, but particularly with the attorney general. Okay, he's going to be unhappy with them no matter what. He was unhappy with Bill Barr because Barr didn't figure out a way to prosecute the Bidens and figure out a way to prosecute Hillary. And, you know, he had that crazy investigation with John Durham go on for several years to, you know, it was a complete waste of money and time. And, you know, she's going to get an earful of that from Trump all the time. I mean, literally that's going to be her main, you know, that's going to be her main time suck for her is listening to him rant about who she should be getting.
Which I just on this point,
which is not normal, by the way.
No, of course it's not. But we were talking about this on the main Bulwark pod earlier today with Tim. He was playing a clip from her where she was talking about, you know, locking Hillary Clinton up and also doing a, like, we need to go prosecute the prosecutors. Like, we need to go after the people who had been going after us. Now, do you think that Jack Smith and some of the people, Fannie Willis, like, do you think that they're kind of in the first tier of people that Trump will want to go after?
They might be. And I think they probably are. I don't know how he's going to do that other than by issuing subpoenas and going through their records and papers and looking for things to pull out of context. But yeah, I don't think that's going to necessarily go very well for them. Not for the Jack Smith's world, but I mean for the Republicans, because first of all, they're incompetent. And second of all this does is just, you know, churn over the soil of what Trump did in 2021. And, you know, I mean, you want to keep talking about this investigation? Go for it. Let's keep talking about what's in the investigation. And remember, we're going to have, in all likelihood, we're going to have a nice report from Jack Smith between now and January 20th, 2025. And, you know, there's probably going to be some pretty interesting stuff in there.
Yeah. That is interesting. I hadn't quite thought about that's a bit of a shield for him potentially. Like, right? He can kind of
But he's got. I think what the Justice Department should do. Look, this is a historic. It was a historic investigation. It went to the survival of the Republic, and it was a sprawling criminal investigation. And I think the historical. We have the Republic has a right to know at this point, and I think the historical record needs to be made complete. And I think all this stuff should be just dumped out there, in the public, so that nobody will sanitize it later.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did you see the piece by Tom Goldstein in the New York Times?
No.
Let me just tell you about it real quick, because I'm interested in everything. All right, so Tom Goldstein's the editor of SCOTUS blog. He's a longtime Supreme Court advocate. He was an advisor to Al Gore. And last week, he wrote this op-ed arguing that all prosecutions against Donald Trump should be dropped because democracy's ultimate verdict on these prosecutions was rendered by voters on Election Day. And he said, I quote, "A central pillar of American democracy is that no man is above the law, but Mr. Trump isn't an ordinary man." What?
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw that quote floating around. I mean, I can't even fathom what the argument is.
I mean, the argument is
either nobody's above the law. I can't understand the logic behind it at all.
So the piece kind of argues that that line is incredible. He's no ordinary man, as though he is some different of made of different stuff than other people, which I think is insane. Sort of.
It is true. He's a sociopath. He's a psychopath. He's a bully who manages to basically that's his magic power. That's how he's been getting away with things for 78. 79 years is by bullying people and lying. And, he's not an ordinary man, and he's been treated like he's above the law. There's no question about that. And this is a guy who should have been, this man should already be in jail. He should have been in jail a long time ago.
But that's the opposite.
Well, but any of us would be in jail if we'd done this as a White House staffer with the documents. I mean, any number of things, this guy should be in jail right now. And I don't understand the logic of saying just because you vote a criminal into office, that absolves them of their crimes. Okay, we've never treated public office that way. Normally when somebody gets convicted of a crime and they're holding a public office, no matter how important, governorship, senator, whatever,
they gotta leave.
Usually they gotta leave and serve their time. People assumed Richard Nixon was gonna have to do that until Gerald Ford pardoned him. There was nobody was arguing that if Richard Nixon committed obstruction of justice in the Oval Office, as people believed he did after listening to those tapes, no one was saying, oh, but that was an official act.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, but, he was elected in 1972 and won in a landslide. Oh, none of that. We've never heard that argument before, because it's a stupid argument. It's a stupid argument. The way the Supreme Court's decision was stupid, and this is not the America we grew up in. It
certainly isn't. Okay, I want to talk about premature capitulation. All right, so I was out of the country for a hot minute there, and while I was out of the country, our friends over at Morning Joe, Mika and Joe Scarborough, they went to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
And I wonder I'm just curious what you think about that.
I didn't see a useful purpose to it. I know what their rationale for it was, but I didn't see a particularly useful purpose to it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be critical. It's just, it's never going to make the guy happy, and he's not going to get better by having these conversations. And I don't think it was a productive exercise. Let me just leave it at that.
Can I say one thing about this that I've been thinking about?
Yeah.
Because I go on that show. It's actually one of my, I like that show because I sort of like the loose roundtable discussions.
Yeah, I do too. Really, I just hate getting up at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, it's a little early. I often do the later hours, but I want to raise this because I think this is what I've been grappling with. I have this worry about, and maybe I have PTSD from 2017 when I watched all of the Never Trumpers kind of get on board with Trump. Not all of them, but like there was kind of a remnant few of us that kind of made it the whole way. But, you know, back then, Scott Jennings was never Trump and Lindsey Graham was never Trump and Marco Rubio was never Trump and a million other Republicans who have subsequently capitulated have. And I just wonder if there's something about when you call Trump, right, like they are commenters who have been very clear-eyed about
Trump. Yeah. Yeah.
And so they have articulated sort of not just clearly, but also every day, right? Consistently every day, sort of denounced him with clear eyes. What do you make of the idea, though, that people, when you've said that somebody is all of these things, and then it's sort of like, doesn't it feel like maybe you didn't mean it? Like, I am afraid when you have the most vociferous voices, it would be like you or I going to Mar-a-Lago. The fear is that it sends a message that like it didn't, none of it was true, right? That it extra normalizes him because you've got people who are excessively critical who are now
I agree with that.
Saying like, no, this is just normal journalistic practice.
Yeah, I agree with that. If this were a normal journalistic exercise, there would have been an interview.
Yeah.
Okay. Where they actually talk, you know, it was those The description of the meeting was one in which there was a back and forth about issues. Okay. But that would be informative for viewers. Do it as an interview. Maybe this is a preliminary step towards some interview, which would get some pretty serious ratings, but I don't, you know, is it really that productive? I don't think it's necessarily that productive.
Yeah. It's sort of like the Washington Post saying democracy dies in darkness. I think part of it is like the fact that it is one thing for people who've basically taken a neutral posture toward this the whole time. It's another thing when, like you say, democracy dies in darkness and you change your tagline to that in the Trump era and sort of commit to being an accountability mechanism only to sort of then shrink from that at the very moment. It matters. No one cares about the Washington Post endorsement from an actual endorsement standpoint. But I just think what I'm finding alarming is that it seems like the civic space is starting to get chilled.
No, I absolutely agree with that. And I think that people, even people who you think would not be fearful or should not be fearful of Trump are in fact extremely fearful of Trump. And I think we're going to see that come out more and more over the next few months where people who have been fighting the fight, they're going to be people who just basically say it's just not worth it anymore. And yeah. So I that does concern me. On the other hand, I think there are many people who now want to get in and stand up for what's right. And double down, if you will. I think but I do absolutely think that there are people who are exhausted by this and who, may fear retribution in some manner. And even though you would think that they have enough money or fame not to be fearful, they're human. And there's an exhaustion factor. And the guy is president of the United States, and he is crazy. So I'm not justifying anything that anybody does with respect to him and caving to him and normalizing him. But I think we as people who are going to continue to stand up to the guy have to understand that we're going to see some people go and do this.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of a bummer. Okay, so we have some news today in the New York hush money case. We do have some actual legal news here. Sentencing was scheduled for next week. Trump asked for the case to be dismissed. DA Bragg said he was open to waiting until Trump left office in 4 years for sentencing, which is both optimistic and interesting of him. And today the judge officially moved the sentencing and asked both parties to brief their arguments in early December. What do you think of Bragg's suggestion of holding that sentencing until 2029?
That's not a bad idea. It wasn't my first idea. I mean, it wasn't my first choice. My first choice would have been, I don't think he's ever going to serve a sentence.
Because by the time, you know, he can only serve the sentence if he is no longer president. And by the time he's no longer president, I mean, he's going to be not in any condition to do anything, is my belief. Because I don't think he's going to mentally last 4 years. It's going to be a scary down ride on down the escalator, but that's what I think is going to happen. So I don't think he's ever going to serve a sentence. So what I had suggested, just again, brainstorming or just throwing it out there, would have been I would have sentenced him to prison and then suspended the sentence and then issued a fine. So at least I would have been able to make the statement as a judge, which, you know, as the sentencing judge is entitled to do, that this deserved jail time. But in light of the fact that he is going to be president of the United States, any such sentence could not be served. So I'm going to suspend the sentence because it would not be constitutionally executable. But a fine is perfectly appropriate. And so I'm going to leave that in. I think that would have been another approach to doing this. But having it hang over his head is not a crazy idea either, because then, you know, if the conviction gets affirmed, which it should, although, you know, it's possible you could get it reversed. I don't think it's likely. You know, as my friend Karen Agnifilo, former DA, a senior assistant district attorney in Manhattan, pointed out, this means he's going to be while he's president, he's going to be out on bail still. So I kind of like that. He's still on conditions. He's on release conditions from a court because he's a convicted criminal. So I don't mind that hanging out there for 4 years. Either way is fine with me.
Interesting. Okay, George, thanks as always for talking about the legal news with me. Thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of George Conway Explains It All. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and we will see you guys next week.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell Longwell about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the Ebola mess to the Russian ties. Listen close.